Well, there's really no evidence that the Ephors functioned this way. And as I mentioned in an earlier lecture, Sparta was a very traditional society. The two kings, who were hereditary commanders and priests, met with the council, the Gerousia, a very senior group of men. The Ephors apparently consulted with them, and they're usually referred to in the sources collectively as the authorities. The phrase frequently used by Thucydides is ta tele ton lacedaemonion, that is, the supreme guys, the ones with final say, of the Lacedaemonians, that is, the people of the Spartan state, not just the Spartan citizens, but of all members of that state. That's a significant phrase. And I believe that in many instances, decisions were reached more by discussion and consensus rather than by debate and vote. And when the authorities were agreed, they brought their opinion before the assembly, and the assembly of Spartan citizens would then ratify it, yes or no. And any citizen in that assembly had the right to stand up and speak to the issue, either pro or con. And in that sense, the Spartan assembly functioned very much like most Greek assemblies. The assembly in the end was sovereign. But the notion that there was some kind of political set of factions, particularly a group that is often designated the Hawks, a term that's been borrowed from the American political debate of the 60s and 70s over the Vietnam War, that the Hawks, that there were certain Ephors, or men who would get elected Ephors, who were determined to settle with Athens, to destroy Athens, and they finally achieved their ends in 432 BC, and they're standing behind many of the incidents in Spartan history to push a very reluctant assembly, afraid of Helots, into war. That image, which is an image that is essentially based on our inherited image of Sparta, that image is very hard to prove from the sources. The Ephors apparently didn't dictate foreign policy, and the second point, and this might be a function of most moderns, that there is a failure to understand the position that the kings played in Spartan society. I mentioned earlier, Sparta was unusual in that she retained her hereditary kings. Those kings came from two different lines, the Agiad, senior line, the Eurypontid, the junior line. I think the function of kings in Sparta would be equivalent to the function of Queen Victoria in the British constitution of the 19th century. They reigned, but they did not rule. The Ephors, the Gerousia, the assembly ruled. They gave a sense of unity to a very, very diverse state that included not only Spartan citizens, but the Perioeci, the Helots, the various Spartan allies. They commanded armies, and in being regal figures, they had a natural sense of authority, a natural position of authority, where they could issue orders in a way no elected official in a state like Athens or Corinth, which had no kings, could do so. They also retained their role as hereditary priests. And Herodotus, in his account of the Spartan kingship, goes to great lengths to explain that importance. You remember, I mentioned that all public acts are going to be sanctified by sacrifices to see if the gods are favorable. And the kings are the ones who will officiate over those sacrifices. And that will include the swearing of oaths. Any kind of political diplomatic action, as we understand it in the modern age, would involve a religious action in which the king or one of the two kings would be central to the entire event. And so the kings had a very special role they played. They had what Romans would call auctoritas, that is influence. Charisma, maybe, would be the Greek word. It would be their personality, the respect of them, as leading figures. They had gone through the same training system as all Spartans. They were revered for their inherited position, but also as for their position as the quintessential Spartan. Any king such as Leonticus or the regent Pausanias who acted out of bounds of that tradition was immediately yanked in and hauled up before the Ephors and the Gerousia. And the reason they were is they were acting so unkingly and so uncharacteristically of a regal figure. The sad fact of the matter is, in this period of the Pentaconta Aetia, there is no dynamic, charismatic king or kings, you know, from either of the two families who could play the role that was expected of kings in Sparta. We know of a great one in King Cleomenes in the period before the Persian Wars. We know of another one at the very end of this course, right after the Peloponnesian War, King Agesilaus II, who ruled from 399 to 360 BC and is the architect of the Spartan hegemony and one of the great kings of Sparta. And we have later reforming kings from as late as the 3rd century BC who played similar dynamic roles.